This is the crisis point.
Welcome to the Crisis Point podcast, where, like G.K. Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your co-host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor of Crisis Magazine, and I am joined, as always, by Philip F. Lawler, the director of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts. And we're very grateful to you all for joining us. This week, we're going to dig deep into a very contentious and strangely timely debate, the Second Vatican Council. Fairly recent interventions by Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano and Bishop Athanasius Snyder have made discussions of the, shall we say, wisdom of Vatican II more contemporary than they have been for the better part of 50 years. Traditionalist critiques of the Second Vatican Council and particular Vatican Council fathers are becoming surprisingly mainstream for anyone who has watched the progression of the Latin Mass communities from the close of the Second Vatican Council to about Summorum Pontificum in 2008. Now, I was received into the church in a Latin Mass community. I'm a member of a parish of the priestly fraternity of St. Peter, and I attend the Latin Mass fairly exclusively. Now, my views on, personally, the traditionalist movement, we can get into a bit later, but I want to turn things over to Phil first, because Phil, if I'm not mistaken, your thinking has been changing a little bit on this topic recently.
Yes, it has. I have found myself moving closer to the traditionalists, particularly on liturgical matters.
Breaking news.
And I suppose I'm not there yet. I'm still going to a parish, which is a Novus Ordo parish. And not because I do have the option of traditional liturgy, and I haven't yet moved over. But I find myself more and more sympathetic to the argument that that's where the future lies, and I wonder how it all works out. I'm very troubled by it because there is a division. But I think that I'm grateful to Archbishop Vigano for forcing this debate open, and for forcing us to confront the fact that there is a split within the church that we can't keep ignoring.
Yeah.
You know, for years, I have been saying that reform is only going to begin when bishops are willing to hold other bishops, call other bishops to account. And he did that. Mm. And I've also said that bishops have to acknowledge a tremendous pastoral failure in the past several decades. And he did that too. And for that, I'm immensely grateful. And it has moved me in that direction.
I come at this from a bit of an odd angle because I was a high church Episcopalian and Anglo-Catholic, but I went to Roman Catholic schools. And so for, I think, 8 years, I would go to school mass at very dull saccharine Novus Ordo parishes. And never once in those 8 years did I ever seriously consider converting to Catholicism because our liturgy was just so much better. So when I became a Catholic, I guess it was inevitable that I would either go through the route of the Ordinariate, the Anglican Ordinariate, or the Latin Mass. And I chose the Latin Mass for a number of reasons. Mostly, I still love the ordinary, mostly just because I wanted to prove to myself that I was converting to Catholicism and not just sort of becoming an Anglican in exile in Rome. But I guess there was no chance of me ever really becoming a Novus Ordo type Catholic. But that is not true of you, Phil. And you have historically been, may I say, sort of a little bit more critical of the traditionalist movement, as we call it. So can I ask what it was particularly that made you sort of come around to the trattier way of viewing things?
It's been a process. I have for many years been allied with the folks who have been speaking about the reform of the reform. And it gets more and more difficult to see the reform of the reform happening. Yeah. I mean, we're now how many years into the reform, and things haven't really gotten better. I mean, there was the period after the council when liturgical abuse just went wild in the, I'd say in the 70s maybe. Yeah. And then it calmed down a little bit, but it didn't get better. You know, it got worse at a slower pace.
Mm.
And through the pontificates of John Paul II and Benedict XVI, we saw, you know, we saw some signs of hope at the level in Rome, particularly when Summorum Pontificum, but that's another story.
Yeah.
We saw better translations, for one thing, which was a real boon. But at the parish level, things didn't really change that much. You know, you still got a lot of sloppy, irreverent liturgy, and you still have routine liturgical abuse. I mean, it is routine. And
yeah, that's true.
I have a lot of trouble getting bishops to acknowledge that it's not unusual. There is liturgical abuse going on everywhere. One thing that was a bit of an eye-opener to me was when we went on vacation last year and we were going to take a trip. And my wife Lila and I were thinking about what are we going to do about getting to Mass. And I'm sure anybody listening to this probably has had the experience that we've had of going to Mass somewhere where you're not familiar
mm-hmm.
with the place, and you're just shocked and horrified, and you wonder why did I let myself in for this?
Yep.
Well, what we did is we noticed that on our way and on our way back, we would be passing churches run by the Fraternity of St. Peter.
Oh.
And we said, okay, problem solved. We know what we're going to get there.
There you go.
And that sort of made me focus on the fact that one of the great virtues of the traditional liturgy is that you know what you're going to get.
And have been getting for centuries. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't have to worry. Now, we've solved the problem where we live and always have solved the problem where we live by finding one of the parishes that does things right, does the Novus Ordo right. But you shouldn't have to do that. You know, it shouldn't be a matter of hunting out one of the few places where you won't be appalled by the liturgy.
And speaking of, I mean, once you start seeing liturgical abuses, you can't unsee them. Widespread use of Eucharistic ministers, that's a liturgical abuse. Eucharistic ministers, or rather, excuse me, extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion.
Right.
They're not supposed to be used except in cases of emergency. I went to a daily mass at a parish once. It was chairs in the basement of the church because they didn't want to heat the whole church. And no one knelt during the consecration. That's technically liturgical abuse, encouraged by the priest who didn't provide kneelers to the congregation. And nothing against the priest, whatever. But, he probably didn't know, but technically liturgical abuse. If you can kneel, you have to kneel. And I don't know if this is technically liturgical abuse. But another one that I see, even at my local parish, which isn't that bad, deacons preaching regularly on Sunday. That's don't quote me on that. Don't know if it's liturgical abuse, but it's definitely discouraged. But that's again, that's routine. Priests seem to be only too happy to delegate every possible role to the permanent deacons. These widespread corruptions. I mean, we talk about the Renaissance. These things are happening out in the open. This is a different kind of corruption.
Yeah, I don't think having deacons preach is an abuse. And sometimes it's welcome. Depends on the priest and the deacon. But yeah, little abuses, little alterations of the readings. You know, for years, priests were in the habit in the Novus Ordo of amending, of sort of freelancing on the Eucharistic prayer,
which is
not allowed. And if you think about it, one reason for that, I believe, is that the Novus Ordo does allow for so many variations that it's easy to say, well, we can vary this. Why can't we vary this part?
Yeah, good point.
And the net result is, that the priest controls the liturgy and thinks of it as his, you know?
Yeah.
Something that happened, I heard recently about a dispute between a priest and a parishioner about what should be to what was appropriate. And the priest said something about, that's not going to happen at my Mass.
Hmm.
And I think if the priest thinks it's his Mass, that it's sort of his property, then naturally you're going to have abuse because he's got the wrong attitude towards the liturgy. It's not his.
Exactly. And that is, as you say, that is an attitude that's easily fostered by this, you know, quote unquote, spirit of Vatican II. Again, I come from kind of an odd position because I was, the Latin Mass is more or less all I've ever known. And I have, you know, I've heard older, wiser, savvier Catholics say to me, you know, I can't believe you guys were so bent out of shape over the liturgy when you didn't have to sit through clown masses, when that's not even part of your lived experience. But I don't know. I mean, at the same time, you've heard of the expression rad trad, radical traditionalists, people who sort of reject everything that happened after the death of John the 23rd. I don't know. I kind of consider myself a glad trad. I don't have any bitterness about Vatican II because I live and worship in a community where the traditional liturgy and devotionals and Orthodox theology is not only alive, but it's flourishing, especially relative to all the local Novus Ordo parishes. So I only have reason to be optimistic. And I know that on the other side of things, there have historically, again, I don't know if it's true or not, I wasn't around, but I've heard people say that traditionalists used to be sort of insular and hostile to outsiders. And it's not my experience. And it's certainly not the experience I've had with older traditionalists, sort of the veterans of the liturgy wars. So again, I mean, I think that this, to coin a phrase, there's never been a better time to be a traditional Catholic.
No, well, you know, now you've made me want to go off in several different directions at once. For one thing, when you talk about the older traditionalists, I don't know any old traditionalists anymore.
Oh yeah. Good point.
It's young people. The argument that the traditional Mass is still allowed as a concession to some old people who have never gotten used to Vatican II, that's just false.
Yeah.
Because most of the people who show up at the Mass when I do go to a traditional Mass, most of them were not alive during Vatican II, before Vatican II. I remember. If I had my way, if I were, the Vatican called me and asked me to design the liturgy anew, I would do what I would look for, what Pope Benedict called for, which is a sort of a mutual enrichment of the two liturgies. I think that there are parts of the Novus Ordo I would like to see, and there are parts of the traditional Mass. If I designed it, it would look more like the traditional Mass than the Novus Ordo. But here's the thing. At this point, I don't think you can ask traditionalists to accept changes, however small, that bring it closer to the Novus Ordo. And the reason is that they have been burned.
Mm.
And they are now suspicious of change, and I understand quite well why they would be suspicious, and it might be a long time before we can get over that suspicion. And moreover, I think it would be a mistake to make radical changes again. I mean, we already did that, and it tore the church apart. And if there's going to be any change, it has to be an organic change in adaptation rather than someone sitting in an office somewhere and deciding.
I watched this really fascinating documentary about the life of Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, and I am not a Lefebvreist. As I said, I attend a fraternity parish, not a society parish. But there was a moment where, as I'm sure our listeners know, and as you obviously know, Phil, Archbishop Lefebvre was disciplined even before the Econ consecrations. He was disciplined for persisting in saying the traditional Latin Mass against the orders of his superiors. And he was furious about this. And in one homily, addressing a very large gathering of his followers, he said, "I am being disciplined for saying the Mass as I said it for the first 40 years of my ministry. How is that possible? How is the Mass suddenly invalid?" And, the Vatican never said that it was invalid or illicit, but it wasn't until Summorum Pontificum that Benedict made explicitly clear that that any priest anywhere in the world, in the Latin Rite, has the right to say the traditional Latin Mass, the Tridentine Mass. And that was, again, while the Vatican never taught otherwise, Vatican functionaries certainly gave the impression that that was the case, that you were not allowed to celebrate the Latin Mass, and that you could and would be punished if you tried to do so. So, again, not trying to launch into an apologetic for the SSPX, but in a certain sense, they were right, and the Vatican regime of the day was wrong. There was some validity to their grievances. And I think you're spot on that if the Vatican were to try to tinker with the Tridentine Mass itself, to try to say that not only are we going to institute a Novus Ordo, but we're going to institute a Novus Old Order Mass, a new Tridentine Mass, I think that would blow up in their faces. That would swell the ranks of the SSPX.
Yes. You know, also, I have to say, Pope Benedict said that every Catholic priest has the right to say the traditional Mass. He did not provide priests with a way to vindicate that right.
And that's right. That's true.
Most diocesan priests today are acutely aware that if they celebrate the traditional Mass, they will be punished by their bishops. Yes. That's wrong, but it's also true.
Great point. That is a terrific point, because I know, as I'm sure you do, many young priests and seminarians who would love to celebrate the Latin Mass, who know that they have the right to celebrate the Latin Mass. Some of them have been removed from their parishes for doing just that. And who are they supposed to complain to? They can't complain to the Vatican. The Vatican doesn't have any, there's no infrastructure there. This is why I am so desperately hoping that Cardinal Sarah is the next successor of St. Peter, because he will sort that out. That will be a high priority for him, and it's an easy fix. Any pope that wanted to do it could do it in a day. They could create a court of appeals. It would be very, very easy. I want to come back to Cardinal Sarah. Don't let me forget about him, but Phil, you go ahead.
Where was I going? You asked me a few minutes back about what brought me to this pass where I find myself more and more sympathetic to the traditional argument. There was a poll taken, and it's now some months ago, within the year at least, that found that on critical, or I don't mean necessarily critical issues, but on controversial issues like contraception and abortion, that traditionalists, people who go to traditional Mass, are far more likely to embrace the Church's teaching than those who go to the Novus Ordo.
Mm, yep.
And I read that and I said, "Of course." Then I asked myself, "Why did you just say, of course?"
Yeah.
And I realized it's because the people who go to the traditional Mass are going there by choice because they're serious.
Mm-hmm.
If you just feel like you have to go to Mass on Sunday because you have to go to Mass on Sunday, there's probably a Novus Ordo parish closer to you.
Yes.
And if you're making the extra effort, it's because you're serious. And if you're serious about your faith, then you embrace the teachings of the Church fully.
Right.
And that cuts both ways. On the one hand, I want, since I take the church seriously, I want to worship with others who do.
Yes.
On the other hand, I don't want to desert those who don't. You know, there's an aspect of evangelization still in being in a Novus Ordo parish and trying to nudge people closer to honest communion with the Holy See, to thinking with the church. So that's, I guess that's part of my reluctance to make the full jump.
What I honestly expect will happen is that the Novus Ordo will probably just go away. It'll take a couple of hundred years, but I expect that, you know, if there's any growth in the church, it will continue to be in the Latin Mass communities. The Novus Ordo groups will continue to dwindle. Those who decide to remain around will probably go to the Ordinariate, which is basically just the Novus Ordo with much better language and much better liturgy. And then everything will pretty much just be fine. There will, the Vatican II will just sort of become, you know, a distant memory, and we'll all be happier and we'll get along much better. I mean, someone like me who was born, who was received into the church through the Latin Mass, the fraternity, and now belong to a fraternity parish, my children will belong, that will be their native parish. And this is a problem that may just resolve itself over the course of generations.
Yeah, I think it will. And I'm not sure that it will take a couple of hundred years. We've seen such a huge exodus from active participation in the church. And it's in... That's not in the traditionalist parishes. They're bursting at the seams. So I think that it might come about much faster than you suggest. And I think that the COVID lockdown is going to be a factor, because a lot of the people who haven't been going to church for the last several months, I don't think will ever come back.
I'm curious to see what the data says.
Yeah, so I think that that is the way that we're moving. And maybe it is just a matter of time and generation. And part of it will also be getting over our current obsession with Vatican II. Mm. You know, the notion that Vatican II is some sort of super council, and the fact that all of our lives we've been talking about Vatican II this and Vatican II that. And when you see this one council writ large, and you look at all of church history through the lens of this council, it can be a bit of a distortion. It's much better to look at the council through the lens of church history. And as Pope Benedict said, to look for the continuity.
Wasn't it you who said there's a problem when we talk about the council? We all know that we're talking about Vatican II.
Yeah, that is a problem. There have been lots of councils and lots of teaching that wasn't in councils. And if we are Catholics, then we embrace the whole of that tradition.
Hmm. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this topic today. I'm sure we'll come back to it soon enough. But in the meantime, until next week, I am Michael Warren Davis. He is Philip F. Lawler. And this is The Crisis Point. Thank you all very much for joining us. And God bless you.